You're listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast series.
Spreading Objectivism, a vision for ARI's future, with Tal Svani. Recorded live as part of OCON 2021.
Okay, so I'm exceptionally nervous and excited this year. I've prepared like I've never prepared before for a talk, because really I've been thinking about, planning, dreaming, waking up with the ideas I'm going to share with you for about a year. And I'm going to tell you and share with you the story of what I have, the thought process I went through to come to a conclusion and an announcement that I'm going to make, which I think is the largest announcement or the most ambitious announcement that I've ever made, and what will drive ARI for years to come. And if I can get you 5% as excited about it as I am, then it'll be a huge success for me. Thank you. So I got one guy. So, but before I go, I want you to tell you, and some of you will pick up on this line, a short story. Suppose you live on an island. It's a beautiful island. You love it. You love walking it on its warm sand beaches with the wind in your face. The people are friendly, cordial, and welcoming. You love walking in its island town center, where there are little coffee shops and restaurants. And it's just great. You live an amazing islander life. And then one day, storms start hitting your island, lashing it from every side. Tidal waves are hitting it from the right, from the left. Something is happening to your beautiful island. You start hearing all kinds of new words that people speak on the island. They're turning into social movements, trends. People are starting to go against each other in your island. And it starts to take effect on the island itself. It's not just ideas anymore. It's happening. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. People are taking those ideas to the street. They're taking action, destructive action. And the more action there is, the more reaction there is. And the flames are starting to show up, and it's getting closer and closer to you in your street. And you see things you've never thought you'd see on your island. You sit down in your house in the afternoon, and you're worried. You're concerned. You're frustrated. And you have the urge to fight back, to do something about it. But as you sit and you think about it, you ask yourself, what do I do? How do I act? Who am I fighting? What am I fighting? You're lost for answers. And as you're lost for answers, you and your beautiful island are never to be heard from again. I started my role at ARI 3 years ago, 2018, and the first discussion I had with Jim Brown, the CEO before me, he said something, you know what your job description is? And I said, no. He said, it's easy, save the world. And I shrugged it off and just, you know, went on. And the more I worked at ARI and we achieved great things, the more this job description came back to haunt me. Every time I asked myself, am I changing the world? So I reflected about what I did since I joined. So the first thing, if you remember what I did, is content. The content needs to be out there, accessible for everyone to see, to hear, no friction between you and the content. Anyone, anywhere in the world can access it free of charge. You know, we went to a model of pay us to share it for free, like a Wikipedia model, rather than behind a paywall. And so we put everything on YouTube. We launched a mobile app. We redesigned and rebuilt the whole campus, so now we can track everything that is going on it and put many more courses on it from the e-store. And this is what happened. Exponential growth of the core courses of Ayn Rand, Leonard Peikoff, all the Objectivist corpus, and it's continuing to grow. That's no surprise. This is the YouTube subscribers, growing exponentially still. And the mobile app just reached over 100,000 hours of watch time. This is huge, over 52,000 downloads. And this year, when we decided that we want to reignite and push very hard on distributing books for teachers, we reached one of our peak years ever because we introduced the idea of e-books right on time with when COVID hit, and we hit 380,000 books this year. And we're going to go way up. Just think about it, 380,000 kids reading Ayn Rand. Just want to share with you a map that Zane from our team did. Every dot is a school that made an order over the years of this program. Isn't that amazing? But there's a but. Every time I was looking at the results of every project, we smashed the goals. We hit it. We hit a home run. And I kept asking myself, what game are we playing? What is that stadium where, you know, the ball gets out of? What are we playing? Are we making a real impact? Are we changing something fundamental? I want to go back to the idea of fighting back. A lot of donors, when I started, urged me to fight back. We want to hear your voice. Get our voice heard out there in the, you know, in the space of media and everything. You know, put ads, do something. So I did. We brought Jordan Peterson. We did 12 episodes with Dave Rubin. We organized debates for Yaron. We even fought Paul Krugman, the evil Paul Krugman. And we changed. We actually won. The New York Times changed the title of this from this to this after we wrote, and Ankar wrote a letter to the editor. And they, by the way, there's a link here that made a huge spike of visitors to our website to download our white paper on COVID. It was a huge success. But every time I looked at the data, I was asking myself the same question. I'm looking at pieces of a puzzle. What is the puzzle? So around September of last year, I took a deep dive. And I want to say a big thanks to Ankar and Keith and Ilan for supporting me through months of thinking and asking them to join to a five-hour meeting where we just talk about how we're thinking about our strategy. And it took me months. I've talked to dozens of people in the community, OAC candidates, OAC students, OAC graduates, people in the academia all over to build what I call a customer journey map. How do you get even aware of the fact that Ayn Rand exists? Who tells you that Ayn Rand exists? Is it a teacher, books for teachers? Is it a family or friend video? Yaron Brook came up so many times. Movements, organizations, celebrity mentions. What is it? So I mapped all of it and realized that the pivotal moment in one's journey towards objectivism is reading Atlas. It's before and after. And then what happens after that? What made you move forward and read some nonfiction? Did you go to the nonfiction first? And so I've built hundreds of maps. And I can tell you today all the data around intellectual journeys, as I call them, what makes people get introduced to Ayn Rand, read Atlas Shrugged, engage with the philosophy, and even what makes them see or want to pursue an intellectual career. But still, there was this thing that unites everything together, right? That you have to see. And I was asking myself, where do I go to see the one in the many? Where do you go? So I heard there's a philosopher, she has a superpower of seeing ones in manys. So that's all I needed to do. And I want to share with you a little bit of the journey I went through in reading a lot of what Ayn Rand had to say about how we change the world. So there's an essay called What Can One Do that I find extremely helpful and optimistic in philosophy who needs it. And I want to read paragraphs from it for you. If you are seriously interested in fighting for a better world, begin by identifying the nature of the problem. The battle is primarily intellectual, philosophical, not political. Politics is the last consequence, the practical implementation of the fundamental metaphysical, epistemological, ethical ideas that dominate a given nation's culture. You cannot fight or change the consequences without fighting and changing the cause. Nor can you attempt any practical implementation without knowing what you want to implement. This is Ayn Rand. So, you have to accept, or you have to appreciate the magnitude, the complexity of the problem that you're dealing with before you even start. We know that in business, that we all know that. What is the nature of the problem we're trying to fix? And then she continues and says, it's a remnant of a mystic philosophy, specifically of the mind-body split, that makes people approach intellectual issues in a manner they would not use to deal with physical problems. They would not seek to stop an epidemic overnight. Where's Amish? Or to build a skyscraper single-handedly. We're talking about building New York City, not a skyscraper. Nor would they refrain from renovating their own crumbling house on the grounds that they are unable to rebuild the entire city. So I can save the world. Screw it. I'm not going to do anything about it. What can I do? That's the attitude. But in the realm of men's consciousness, the realm of ideas, they still tend to regard knowledge as irrelevant, and they expect to perform instantaneous miracles. Somehow, or they paralyze themselves by projecting an impossible goal, and this is an exact description of many meetings that I had with donors and stakeholders. It's like, yeah, you know, you do this and you change the world. You just, you know, everybody will come to you if you do this ad on New York Times or Washington Post or whatever. It's like, really? A 3-hour talk on on the radio with the most powerful character ever still can't change the world instantaneously. So what do? I want to talk a little bit about getting closer to the solution she offers us. In an intellectual battle, you do not need to convert everyone. History is made by minorities. Or more precisely, history is made by intellectual movements which are created by minorities. Who belongs to those minorities? Anyone who is able and willing to actively concern himself with intellectual issues. Here it is not quantity, but quality that counts. The quality and consistency of the ideas one is advocating. So I think this is very powerful. It tells you, it gives you a direction of how you should think about changing the world. You can think, you know, I did a search today about what is the most trending YouTube right now. And within 3 hours, somebody put, I customized a hospital and paid for people's medical bills, 22 million views in 3 hours. Or if you build a monster truck or something like that. Do you think that a young Harry Binswanger or a Tara Smith watches those videos? So when they tell you, oh, I want 1 million views, who are those 1 million people? Are they going to make any difference? So I want to show you, and luckily we have the video, where Ayn Rand answers these questions on video from the New Intellectual.
Listen, you know, in several of your novels, you've made the point that leadership in any culture, not only in art, but in literature, morality, politics, and economics, that this sort of leadership must be provided by what you call the professional intellectuals. I wonder if you could tell me just what you mean by the term professional intellectuals. Who are they, for example?
The professional intellectuals are, in effect, the field agents of the army whose head or commander-in-chief is the philosopher.
Mm-hmm.
The philosopher, the man who defines the basic fundamental ideas of a culture, is the man who determines history. And professional intellectuals are all those whose professions deal with the humanities, the studies of men, as against the physical sciences. The professional intellectuals in all their various professions carry to the rest of the culture, to the rest of society, the philosophical premises, the ideas which have been defined by the philosopher. Therefore, they are the transmission belts. They are the ones who determine the goals, the values, and the direction of the culture.
They determine the goals, the values, and the direction of the culture. You all got this epilogue that I asked Leonard personally to get an approval from him to give it as a handout. Because if you read it, it's a brilliant summary of how you should look at history. I want to read you just the first paragraph. He says, Ayn Rand's theory of men leads to a distinctive interpretation of history. By identifying the cause of human action, her theory enables us to discover the factor that shapes man's past and future. If man is a conceptual being, philosophy is the prime mover of history. I urge you to read it. It's a brilliant, for me, it's a short masterpiece of looking at history as a battle between two giants, two people, two forces that shape human history. If you can look at the whole, you know, ups and downs of human history as a battle between Platonic or Aristotelian ideas, all the way from ancient Greece, ancient Rome, the fall into the Middle Ages or Dark Ages and the rise of Christianity, the rediscovery of Aristotle, and so on. And I think there's a brilliant passage that I wanted to share. The way Leonard defines it is that it's not only Plato and Aristotle. He sees it as now a battle between Kant and Rand. He says, Ayn Rand is to Aristotle what Kant is to Plato. Both sides of the perennial duel in their pure form have finally been made explicit. Think about it. We carry the name of one of the four people in human history who created a start-to-finish philosophical system. Those are the mega philosophers. And they changed the world. What we're experiencing now is a result of, 250 years of Kant and his predecessors. The question is, what are we going to do about it with the ammunition that Rand gives us? So I want to go back to the island, just to not end the story so badly. This is the island. The tidal waves that are hitting it from the right and the left are not caused because of the storm. It's because of the strong undercurrents that are pushing it to different places in the ocean of human history. This is what's going on. And the question is, what kind of battle are we fighting? What I think we should fight is to create new undercurrents that are going to push this island to different places. So what does it mean about us? The organization that has a mission to propagate the ideas of Ayn Rand's philosophy. What makes us unique? What is our unique ability or competency that only we can do? I see three. One, we own the Ayn Rand archives. We are the guardians of her legacy. We need to make sure that it stays alive forever, the flame that is burning. And she was really, really good in keeping everything, all of her journey. We're so fortunate to have all of it. So we're upgrading the physical environment of the archives like nothing we've done before. We just digitized everything. This is a 917 PDF page, which was the finding guide in the archives. This is how scholars should have looked for things in the archives. Now it's all in a fully digitized database that is secure and searchable. Complete upgrade of all of the content. And the result of it, what you will be seeing, is one collection after another, after another, after another, that Audra and the team are going to put out, allowing you and researchers all over the world to do much more research on this giant. And I want to give you some vision of what we have in store when we have the money to build a place for you to visit and take a journey through Rand's life and Rand's ideas. So we're already thinking about it, the building models to a point in time where we'll have the money to build it, maybe here in Austin. Thank you. So if you want to see the full virtual experience, it's in the booth. And if you haven't heard, we launched a new program mainly designed for a lot of people that are not objectivists that love Ayn Rand and love the books and want to contribute not to the promotion of objectivism, but for the legacy of Ayn Rand. So we created the Friends of Ayn Rand Archives. If you want to support the archives directly, please contribute to this program. The second unique ability that we have. I think that because of the decades of the high level of integrity and fidelity that ARI's CEOs and board members kept, we are the de facto, the center of gravity for anyone who is ignited by Rand's ideas. I see people from all over the world, Guatemala, right? When you, there's another one. You, I know. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. If you just read Atlas and you are ignited by the ideas, you end up with us. You end up on our mobile app and our campus and eventually in OAC. And that is a huge market position to be in. Think about it. 36 years of building ourselves and our brand as the place to come if you're ignited by those ideas. And thirdly, we have the world-class philosophical education. It's very hard to explain to people that didn't go through the OAC experience what it is. It's the best philosophy school in the world. The best philosophy, and hopefully the best school. But the level of teaching, what I gained from each and every one of those courses, I can define them as the best educational experiences I've ever had. All the way from relearning objectivism or diving deeper to the writing course with Keith when I just learned that I don't know how to write. Not only that I don't know how to write, I don't know how to think clearly. So I just do, as a proof, I just listed all the soldiers that are instructing or giving our speakers in OCON. Just look at the list. Each and every one of them are a product of our educational programs, all the way from the 80s to the 90s OGC to today. And late bloomers like me and auditors were all products of this educational system. So let me ask you, if intellectual change history and we can attract the intellectual minds that are ignited by Rand's ideas, and we can educate new intellectuals at the highest level, what should we be announcing today? So, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce you to our biggest initiative so far. The Ayn Rand University. Yes, this is the time. This is bigger than iPhone. Believe me, this is bigger than iPhone. It's not our mobile app. It's not a rebranding of things we already do. It's a serious launch of an educational organization that is going to be growing over the years and decades to come. It's going to be called the Ayn Rand University, and it's going to be the best philosophy and hopefully maybe humanities school in the world one day. I think if you ask me as a marketer, if I would put money on a university that offers the best ideas in the world, I would. I think there's going to be a vacuum that is going to grow between the ridiculousness of the left and the right. And there's going to be a void. And where would kids go to learn liberal arts in a decade? Where would they go? So there's Brad Thompson, who's doing great work in Clemson. I took my daughter for an interview with him. But other than that, so let me explain to you how we're going to launch this initiative, what it's going to have today, and your imagination can take you to what it can be in a decade or two. So the Ayn Rand University is going to have four elements to start with. Sorry, I'll go back. The first one, we're going to consolidate all of our outreach programs into one center, trying to attract more people and the right people to the university. We're calling it the Student Outreach Center, Introductory Education in Ayn Rand's Works and Ideas. That's the objective of this center, to ignite more people, especially young people, to come and learn philosophy and appreciate that philosophy is important and philosophical questions are important, and secondly, that objectivism has something unique to offer them. I'll tell you more about that in a second. The second thing, we're going to repurpose OAC as a 2-year undergrad program for the study of objectivism and philosophy. And thirdly, we're bringing back the OGC, the Objectivist Graduate Center. It's going to be an advanced school for the study of objectivism and philosophy for all of the OAC graduates that are on their path to an intellectual career. And anyone who considers themselves an advanced student of objectivism, all the people on HBL, if you think you can take those courses at the highest level, you're welcome to join. It will be a buffet of courses that we're going to introduce every year in many different subjects that you can take with our scholars. It's going to be designed mainly for the people in our program that we see that they have the potential to become future objectivist scholars. So you're welcome to ride along. And finally, we're going to grow our faculty and our fellowships. We just grew our junior fellow program from 2 people to 7. We're growing our faculty. And just to give you an idea, a little bit more details on those 4 elements. So those are all the programs we're running right now. We're going to add more with the purpose of getting them to what we call philosophy seminars. Those are seminars designed just to give the idea that philosophy matters, ideas matter, and then tell you, if you're coming to those events, that objectivism is a philosophy. Now, the second from the top is in-class talks that we started this year. We asked all of the thousands of teachers who are ordering our books, would you take an in-class talk from one of our scholars? Guess how many said yes? All of them? Not quite. I thought it would be 20%. Who wants a philosopher, an objectivist philosopher, to come talk to my kids in a public school? 63%. 63% means we can give thousands of talks. And maybe Aaron Smith or Sam Weaver are now focusing on this program can tell you the reaction of the students. They never want this to end. They're asking questions after questions after questions, and some of them will follow you anywhere. If you tell them that the next thing is to come to a seminar, they will follow you to the seminar. They will come to the student conference. They'll end up in OAC. So this is the path. Drive them to more objectivist content and drive them to OAC as the undergrad program that we have to offer them. The second thing is what we're going to do with OAC, the Objectivist Academic Center. We're going to structure it. You can see the curriculum. Those are all the modules we're going to teach in year 1 and year 2. Amazing units to learn from the best philosophers we have in the world. And another thing, and you can take it as an auditor, an amazing course called Introduction to Writing, which is actually Introduction to Thinking and Writing, that I can't recommend enough. So that's going to be a 2-year program designed to build a foundation. And yes, OPAR is still driving the whole curriculum, but in a very deep way. I'm happy to say that, where is Aaron Fried? Where is Aaron? Where is he? You see this guy in the back. Wave your hand again. You deserve it. Aaron Fried was hired when, how long ago, Aaron? 4 months? Really? Wow. Seems like a year. I hired Aaron after doing one of my interviews with OAC students. And I'm talking to this guy, and he's from the Silicon Valley. Tried to major in philosophy and just gave up. And he said, you know, Tal, my passion is to create an organization, an educational organization that promotes objectivism. I said, really? You just stole my central purpose. So I hired him. And within 4 months, and just calling all the people that said, yeah, maybe I'll take OAC, maybe not now, I'm not sure, I want to go to college first. Just by making all those calls and doing some good sales and marketing, we grew from 27 graded students who started OAC last year to 48, and we're going to get, you won't like it, but we're going to get to over 50 for sure, maybe even 60. It's going to be the largest OAC cohort ever. Okay, and we're going to continue to grow that. So I believe that if we'll do things right, I see a future in 5 years where 200, 250 people are starting an undergrad level education in objectivism. And just think about what's going to happen when we're going to grow to those numbers. We're going to get another Harry Binswanger, another Yaron Brook, another Tara Smith, another Robert Mayhew, and all of the other intellectuals that you know that really carry the knowledge of this philosophy to the future. So this is it. I want to tell you what give you some examples of courses from the Objectivist Graduate Center. So this year, those are the courses we're going to offer. We just finished an advanced seminar on introduction on ITOE that was done with all of our intellectuals led by Harry Binswanger. We're going to do morality and moral judgment. There's going to be a course about Kant. There's going to be a physics for philosophers. We're going to explore critical race theory. We're going to do another workshop with Yaron on public speaking and making all of our intellectuals know how to speak better and communicate better. And we're going to do an advanced writing and editing course, which is going to be a higher level of editing than the one in OAC. So if you're interested in one of those courses and you consider yourself an advanced student of objectivism, come talk to us about auditing one of those courses in OGC. Going back to the faculty, we're going to grow it, as I said, dramatically. Just look at the names we have today and the faces that I'm sure you recognize. The bottom row is just the new teaching assistants and junior fellows that we have, and it's going to grow more and more and more. We're going to recruit everyone who shows the desire to pursue an intellectual career, mainly in philosophy, but also in the core humanities. So, Student Outreach Center to OAC to OGC, and potentially three outcomes. Either you're going to work for us and grow our teaching capacity, or you're going to be an academic or an intellectual in another organization, a think tank or somewhere else, writing, being independent like Alex Epstein or Don Watkins. Or you're going to be an intellectual professional and a business leader and go out, do whatever you want to do. Most of us are not professional intellectuals. It can be directly from OAC. I recommend OAC to anyone. I want my kids, hopefully, I don't know if they'll go, but to take OAC at one point. So those are the three outcomes. By the way, the people who support the Institute are the intellectual professionals. I regard everyone who takes the time to take a week out of their year and fly to hot Austin and listen to what we have to say as intellectual professionals. Two more things we're going to do. One, we're going to invest much more in the alumni network of this university, in our intellectual network. We're going to make it more dynamic, more vibrant. And we're opening something on top of Anthem Foundation, which is designed to support people in academia. We're going to expand it and open what we call an influencer accelerator. I ran two cohorts already very successfully. It's going to be a communication and marketing training for objectivist content creators. Anyone who wants to create content that is objectivism inspired, we will help. We'll bring, and we already brought, world-leading experts in how to create your own blog, to create your own YouTube channel, how to write a book and make it a bestseller. So those things are going to be part of our other activities under the university. So, really, what we are going to do is creating a new generation of new intellectuals. That is going to be how we measure our success. Now, I'm always talking about metrics and grounding, and especially an organization like ARI with such a broad, abstract mission to metrics. Right now, and you should hold me accountable for that year over year, I'm going to measure our success as how many people are starting OAC. Because I don't know how the output would look like and where those people will go and what they will do. When I talk to those intellectuals, I find that they're all super unique. They have very specific passions that they drive. Some of them are hardworking, some of them are lazy. I don't know what they're going to do. Some of them write a book every year, some of them never write a book. And I can tell you one thing, I'm going to kick their butt, and I'm going to be the affectionate ass kicker that I need to be in order to make sure that we get output. Because all of this is done for intellectual output. They need to be the ones leaning on that island. So we are going to create new intellectuals. What they will do, hopefully, will be very influential. Now you can ask yourself, okay, how long will it take? I don't know how long will it, what take. But let me answer, because I've done a lot of thinking about it. So I don't know if you know this guy, Theophrastus, who managed, he was the CEO of the Aristotle Institute. And unfortunately, he tried and he failed. He couldn't really get other geniuses to follow Aristotle, and Plato won. This is why we had to wait, what, like 1,500 years until this guy, who's a genius, but working in a church, brings back Aristotle and reintroduces him to Western thought. And then he brought us the science and the art of Da Vinci and Michelangelo and the science of Galileo and Kepler and then Newton and the scientific revolution. He brought us the philosophy and the political philosophy of Bacon and Locke and Jefferson, who are responsible for everything that we have today. And then the destroyers came along, back, bringing back Plato. This guy is a genius. And I think it was about the years that America was founded where he put out Critique of Pure Reason, and we're living it. And his predecessors like Hegel and Marx that brought us the bloodiest century ever. This is how you change the world. Now, I don't know that we'll find another Rand, but we need the conveyor belts. Remember how she calls them? The conveyor belts of the ideas? So the question, what are we going to do with what Ayn Rand gave us? Objectivism, a philosophy based on reason, grounded in truth, in reality. She gives us ammunition. And the question is, what are we going to do with this? I want to read to you one more quote from that same article. Today, most people are acutely aware of our cultural ideological vacuum. They are anxious, confused, and groping for answers. It's almost like she's asking me or us, are you able to enlighten them? Are you able to answer their questions? Can you offer them consistent case? Do you know how to correct their errors? I don't know if you know what it takes to stand on this stage and take question after question after question about philosophy. It takes decades. And I don't know if you know how philosopher work looks like. They don't have tools. Your life is easy. You're extrospecting 99% of the time. You know what they do? They think. They read. They integrate. They introspect all day long. I don't know how they do it. It's easy, huh, Tara? So it takes a lot of effort. And I have so much respect for the people around me today in ARI doing this work. So I'll continue. Are you immune from the fallout of constant barrage aimed at the destruction of reason? And can you provide others with anti-missile missiles? A political battle is merely a skirmish fought with muskets. A political battle is a nuclear war. We're going to create a facility for nuclear missiles. That's what we're going to do. Missiles of reason, of prosperity, and flourishing. So going back to this island, I hope one day we can take it back to more hospitable waters for human beings. I know we can do it. And I think that with the technology, with the internet, with how fast we can disseminate ideas, with the talent of the people that are going to go through our university, we can take it back to where it needs to be. What used to happen in centuries could happen in decades, and maybe could happen in years. And what could happen is, I don't know what it is, but we know that over time, we can change the trajectory of this one. And now it's true, the island is moving in the wrong direction. It'll take time to slow it down and maybe turn it back. But this is the only thing that can do it. This is the only type of work that can be done to reverse it. Everything else is futile. This is the heavy lifting that needs to be done to change the world. And we're going to do it. I want to end maybe with a quote and then maybe a call for action. So there's this quote that I find very moving from Atlas Shrugged. It's about sparks and flames. I went out to become a flame spotter. I made it my job to watch for those bright flares in the growing night of savagery, which were the men of ability, the men of the mind. That's what we're going to do. So I want to thank you for being supporters and a very small minority of people who get it and are going to hopefully support our institute. Very simple call to action. If you're giving any money to any other university, now you have a university and consider yourself an alumni of this university. And bring your children, bring your nephews, bring your nieces, bring your kids, anyone who wants to learn life-serving ideas and support us. We need the money, we need the resources, we need the moral support. Every time I meet you everywhere in the United States or everywhere else in the world, you know, a tap on the back is great. So, thank you very much. Thank you so much. Wow. Thank you so much. So I know there are a lot of questions, and there are a lot of questions. I don't have the answers to all of them, but I'll try to do my best because I think the strategy is pretty clear. The tactics are not 100% clear, but we're going to start this journey. I don't know how it's going to end. Don't ask me where we're going to be in 5 years. I'm going to measure it by cohorts of people starting our programs. And another thing that we're going to try to do is to enlarge the scope of the program. Somebody asked me, when will this become a full-time university? Will it have a campus? You know, however fast we can make it happen, we'll make it happen. And more people asked me about accreditation. We had accreditation for OAC. You know how many people used it? Zero. I don't think that's the name of the game. I think the name of the game is the quality of the curriculum, the quality of the faculty, and the fact that we're going to position ourselves as the best university for the best ideas. And hopefully, people will come. And we're going to do not just wait for them, we're going to market the heck out of it. So I will take questions.
Thank you. This alone was worth the price of admission.
Thank you very much.
Question. Is there a plan to rebrand the application in order to avoid confusion between the current Ayn Rand University?
Yeah. I thought about it, and we might. We might even repurpose the app to become some kind of a front end of the university and upgrade it to be an online experience of the university. So that's in the plan, yes.
And hopefully to make it more user-friendly. That a lot of people around this room quietly have complained.
I know. If you have any complaints about the app, please send them to me or to Lucy. We're trying our best to improve it.
This is incredible. Thank you. I noticed that after the first stage of the four stages, what you're describing could very well be a for-profit venture. Has that been a consideration? So after the outreach to schools, the OAC, the OGC, and the network surrounding, have you thought about whether to make that a for-profit approach rather than the current?
I don't think we need to go for-profit, but I'm planning to make a ton of money.
Yeah, so maybe non-donation-based. I don't care about the legal model.
No, but it's a good question because today we're charging $4,000 as the tuition for OAC if you don't get a scholarship. When we're going to enlarge the scope and get more time, so today you get on a Zoom and it's 2-3 times a week that you come to the main class and then the office hours and other sessions. If we're going to grow the scope, we're going to continue and charge for more. according to the amount of content and education that you're going to get. So don't be surprised if the price of OAC is going to grow slowly to the point where it looks like a tuition of a university.
Great, thank you.
Thanks.
We have a question from online.
Yes, okay, one second.
Tal, could you inform us about the schedule of the OAC academic year? Is it following a typical university schedule? Is it year-round?
Yes. So we're going to run it in quarters, right? Keith, you have to help me out here. Quarter system, right? October starts in October, January, April. So we're going to go all year round for quarters, and it's going to follow the same, what looks like an academic year, but all year long for 2 years is OAC. Yep.
This is a dream come true. I could really get emotional about this.
But I dreamt about this thing many, many nights. Yeah, I can tell you that.
So so that I can market this to some people that I know who might, and it's 2 years. So are you suggesting that they go to regular college for 2 years and then finish up with this?
They can do it while they're, what we are saying to candidates who are in school, drop one class and take OAC today. It's a heavy course. It requires a lot of reading. But you can handle it while you're taking your other undergrad or grad level to education. Don't wait. People wait to like, I'll finish my undergrad, I'll finish my grad school, and then I'll take OAC. Don't wait. Take it as soon as possible.
Thank you.
I would actually urge people to take it as a gap year. It's never too early to take it. So if they can handle things like OPAR, they can start it at 18.
Hi, Tal. Hey. This is wonderful. It's amazing what you've been able to accomplish in 3 years. So my question is, as you mentioned, there are a lot of intellectual professionals here, and a lot of donations come from us, and being able to audit OAC is wonderful, but do you have plans to foster a network of intellectual professionals as well as a network of professional intellectuals?
Yes. We thought about it a lot. A lot of people asked me, can you create like networks of people to connect around everything. I even heard dating. I have to say, this is not our mission. We're not here to just grow a network of people. I really urge, if anyone wants to open a dating site for objectivists or want to, please do, because then I'll have somewhere to deflect this. But it's going to be too distracting for us to say, okay, who's in business of software? Who's in engineering? Who's in, you know, aerospace or whatever that is? So I would say not likely. But we are going to try to attract many more people into this OGC school. If you took OAC, even as an auditor, or you consider yourself an advanced student of objectivism, come talk to us about taking more courses and being part of a network. And we'll open some of the intellectual network sessions to people who want to just come audit, you know, advanced discussions about epistemology or ethics or whatever that is. So talk to us about it.
Online question?
Yep.
Could you talk about the progress and current work of the conceptual education program?
Yes. So where's Ed? Right here. So Ed Thompson, with a partnership with the Institute, opened a fellowship that Sam Weaver is now a fellow of, with conceptual education, with the purpose of doing research and potentially publishing more about conceptual education. So Sam is doing his training right now with professionals, and we have a full plan for him. And if anyone is interested in a specific topic where we can match an intellectual and someone who wants to sponsor a fellowship about a specific topic, please reach out to me. There are many opportunities that I see, because I know what the intellectuals or the budding intellectuals are interested in, and if we can match it together with someone who's interested in promoting a specific aspect of an application of objectivism, we'd be happy to create more fellowships.
Hi. I've seen a lot of people here with shirts and bags and stuff with Ayn Rand or Atlas Shrugged inspired designs. And as far as I know, all of it's third party. Does the Institute have any, have they ever considered having official merch?
Again, it's a great question. But every time that we're thinking about those things, immediately I see the distraction that it's going to create. You have to understand, our resources are very, very limited. And Steve Jobs has a saying, there's no such thing as a small project. We're talking about the fact that it took him 7 years to select a couch or the floor design for the Apple Store, right? It's true. If we take something like that on, then you have to talk about, you know, what platform we're building and what merch and who's selling it, and the profit margins and all of that. So likely not. We're going to focus on what we're good at.
Hi. You correctly framed the battle as one being between Plato and Aristotle. And then
Kant and Rand as well.
And then Kant and Rand, yes. Now, clearly the Kantians are winning in the side of on the humanities, but there's still an implicit Aristotelian segment in the sciences. And maybe that there's a way that ARI can tap into that. Now, most Aristotelian scientists, it's implicit for them. They don't even really get the epistemology behind the scientific method. But there might be a way to reach that audience who are already sort of on our side, at least on the thought process, and then show them that this applies across the board.
Exactly. Can I ask for your name?
Sure. My name is Ash.
Ash. So what you just did is what I hear all year long, which is this is what you should be doing. And I agree with you. But my question is, who? Are you going to sit down and write that article and publish it somewhere where all the scholars are going to see it and change their mind? I don't know how to do it. Do you know how to do it?
I try every
day. Yeah, I can't do it. So this is what we're doing. Because I don't have the answer who can do it. I know some people who can do it, but they're doing other things. So I think my answer is what I just said. Increasing the capacity, the scope of people who can actually do what you just asked. Because what you said needs to be done, and many, many other things that other donors and stakeholders are asking me to do, or asking ARI to do. And I completely agree, but the question is who? And so I think, you know, maybe from the 50 people who are starting OAC in 5-7 years from now, we'll attack exactly what you're talking about. But it takes time.
Hi, so thank you so much for saying this. I think the prospect of a university is really exciting to me. But I'm 16, and I have 2 years left of high school, and I wanted to know if there was anything that I could do by the time I get to undergrad, or what can I do by the time I get there?
We take 16-year-olds.
You take... Then I have my answer.
Yes.
Thank you.
Online question?
Yes.
The topics listed for year one of OAC strongly resembles the chapter titles of OPAR.
Right.
Will Dr. Peikoff's book, in effect, be the textbook of the first year?
Basically, yes. Yes, OPAR still guides our curriculum. Gloria.
Tal, congratulations.
Thank you.
For all that heavy lifting. I think that I don't know, you used the pandemic to really go deep into thinking how to make this battle work. And I was wondering, when you talk about the university, and you've been in UFM, mm-hmm. which I think is the only university that I know currently.
It's the University of Francisco Marroquin in Guatemala.
Yeah, that how they did this is putting careers out there, like medicine, psychology, international affairs, and most of the kids who get there by 17 have no idea.
Yes.
That Austrian economics exist or Ayn Rand. We get there because it's a prestigious university that can get you a good diploma and then you can work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And once you're there studying some specific career, then you get inside these ideas in a broader sense. So I was wondering, what are the things that you think are valuable from that experiment and the things that you think can be better in Ayn Rand University? And then my other question is, I agree with you, minorities move the world. Masses just follow.
Right.
When I did radio, I spoke to millions of people or thousands of people, or I don't know, since I've been doing radio and media, but there's only one Nixon for all the people that you can, you mm-hmm. know, inspire. So I agree, that is like a magnet. But I also think that the minorities that young people follow is for some specific talent that goes beyond objectivism.
I agree with you. You take Yaron, for instance, right? And what Yaron can do. You know, when I did the analysis of what attracts people to objectivism for the first time, how they heard the name Ayn Rand, it's like Yaron Brook was, I saw a YouTube of this guy named Yaron. He has an Israeli name and blah, blah. This is what one guy can do. And we need more charismatic people, but we also need people like Ankar, right? Where does Yaron go when he has a question?
Yes.
So it's really, we need everyone. We need people who can stand on stages and people who can write, people who can teach, people who can go out and do amazing things. We need artists who can project those ideas in many different ways. And I want to take the first part of your question. I want to tell you a story. One of those interviews I did was with an 18-year-old. Just finished year one of OAC at the top of the class. Not from the US, by the way. I call this guy and I talk to him and he's like, yes, I've been reading philosophy since 14. Ayn Rand, of course, this guy speaks fluent English, brilliant mind, and what are you going to do? Applied mathematics. Why not philosophy? What do you do with philosophy? I spoke to another kid. Again, brilliant kid from the U.S. My passion is philosophy. All I do all day long is philosophy. What are you majoring in? Real estate law. Why? What do I have to do with philosophy? So I think what I'm taking from UFM is the understanding that you have to create a vision of a career path. And it's not an easy answer how you do that. But the prospect of just stick with what you love. I don't know how people like Ankar and Greg and Harry and Tara just push through everything they had to do in order to just not give up on their passion. And Robert, it's hard because you can go out, they're all smart, very smart people, they go out and make 10 times more money somewhere, but they choose not to. So I think our job is to, when they're young, even 16, 17, 18, there is a path. Someone will pay you good money. Now, if you're really good, like Jordan Peterson or Sam Harris, you're going to make millions of dollars, but you don't have to. So I think creating a vision very early for a path of an intellectual career, showing them what Alex Epstein does and how people like other people in the objectivist movement who are intellectual, independent intellectuals make a living, and just show them a path and help them to that path. Thanks for the question. Another, how old are you?
17.
17. We accept 17-year-olds.
As a rising high school student, I'm a senior now, and I've been granted the opportunity to teach freshman classes, language arts, writing, using Ayn Rand's Art of Nonfiction, and I hope to apply ITO to statistics class and other things.
Where are you going to teach it?
My own high school.
Okay.
So that's what
that's
I'm doing.
Nice.
Now, I'm using that to preface this. As a high school student, what is the most that I can do to continue to influence people into objectivism, kind of in my local area, besides starting clubs? What's the most that I can do?
The best thing you can do right now is learn yourself. Become better at what you think is right. I won't at 17 think about changing the world. Just think about the years ahead and becoming the best you can do. Ask yourself, what do I want? What kind of career do I want? And who are the teachers who can teach me the best? How can I get closer to the people that know much more than I do about the thing I'm so excited about? And become better and better and better and better. When you're going to be exceptionally good, that's where you're going to start moving the needle. Okay? I don't want you to change a couple of minds in your local high school. I want you to change the world. And so please take 10 years. No, I'm joking, but do what you need to do to become better and define for yourself, what are you passionate about? Is it philosophy? Is it an applicational philosophy? If so, what? Come to OAC, and if you want an intellectual career, continue to OGC. and become a junior fellow and write and speak. I know you're on TikTok, right? You guys are very successful. Maybe take over TikTok, right? But just focus on building the skills and the muscle that you need. It's not about the 4, 5, 20, 100 people around you right now. That's the way I would think about it.
Thank you.
Question from online?
Yes.
Could you provide an update on the various student conferences, specifically Ayn Rand Con in Argentina and Brazil later this year?
We wanted to go to Argentina and Brazil and Mexico, but COVID, you know, happens. We will continue to do those. For us, ARC, the Ayn Rand Conference, is a landing pod for people who are getting into objectivism and experience what we're experiencing here. The reason why we're all coming together is to enjoy the company of each other and discuss and get to speak to people. Think about your first meeting or first conference. This is what those kids experience over a weekend. And we're going to go closer to them in Argentina and in Europe. And next year it's in Prague, I think in the March-April timeframe. We have one in Atlanta. We're going to get closer to them to make it easier for them to come. And you know how it goes. After a weekend of introduction to objectivism, there's a long line, never-ending line, of the same exact questions. And I love it. I get chills every time I hear another, you know, line of young kids asking the same exact question about, what about the poor? and then Yaron and Ankar and Keith and Ilan and Ben and Aaron, they're doing it over and over again, bringing more and more people. And the result is, I don't know if you know, but right now we have over 50% of our OAC cohorts are international. They're coming from those events. So we're going to continue to do those. And of course, we'll do it not online where we can.
Thank you very much for your talk today. It was very inspiring. Thanks. I'm super excited about the fact that ARI is going to grow the next generation of intellectuals. I think that's super powerful. So what does it look like? Have you defined metrics around, you talk about having 50 people starting OAC and then in maybe 5 years, 250 people. What does it look like from a graduation perspective? What do your metrics need to be to really make it
successful? That's a good question. We were thinking a lot about the output metrics because you really want to define output metrics rather than input. But what you do when you can't really figure out what the right output metric is, you go to input metrics. And right now we're at the stage where I can really put my hand on an input metric. Like, I want 75 next year. I want 100 in 2-3 years from now. And then once we'll get more and more people going through this, we will start to understand how we can orient ourselves into activities and build the metrics around them to say that's what we need more of. Maybe the people, how much work is published, you know? Maybe we can count that because that's the output of the whole process. But it's early in the game, and we're going to get better.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. That's it. So I want to thank you very much for all the support, and we're going to do bigger and better things. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Ayn Rand Institute Live podcast. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. You can also find us on YouTube. If you like this content, please share or leave us a review. For more information, go to AynRand.org.